Hello, welcome to the Long Shot Leaders Podcast. I'm Michael Stein. My guest today is Mike Acker. Mike is an executive communication coach, keynote speaker, and author of 10 best-selling books. He's got a new book called Speak With No Fear. This guy's got a lot of skill set to share with us, especially with book writing and public speaking, which is applicable to many things. So here is a very interesting person. Here is Mike Acker.
All right. I'm here with Mike Acker. And Acker, sorry. I said it right in the pregame. I got the COVID, so I got COVID brain. I just got over it. So, bear with me, folks. I'm day 12.
Do you want to redo that just the beginning so you don't have to?
No, we don't do that. We love the mistakes around here.
Oh, yeah. Nice. I love that.
Yeah.
I'm all about the mistakes too.
That's right. And we're going to, a nice segue into that is that you're a public speaker.
Yeah. There are no fixes.
What's that? That's right.
There are no fixes on stage.
The most important thing, as I know from my background in stand-up, is that the relationship with the audience is the most important thing. So we're not going to edit any shit around here. We want to get into you. We want to keep it down and dirty. We want to get real. So I want to find out, did this guy have problems talking when he was younger? What's going on? Let's find out why. 10 books, ladies and gents, on public speaking. Or not all public speaking, but, but pretty much, right?
Most of them, yeah.
Yeah, that's prolific too, man. I want to get into some book writing, knowledge here. But I want to get into you first of all. Where are you from? Were you a shy kid? What's the story? Let's talk a little bit about the beginning.
Yeah, so when I was a kid, I had a speech impediment, and I could not pronounce the sound J. So anytime that I went to say J, it would come out something totally different, and I couldn't hear the difference or speak the difference. On words like shoulder and soldier, those words were the same to me. I couldn't differentiate them. And so what happened was as a kid, as I'm speaking, you get past those toddler years and you're about 4 years old and you should be able to be clearly understood. As I would speak, people would say, what'd you say? What'd you say? What'd you say? And this is something I don't totally remember. I mean, it's ingrained in me. But I went to my mom and I was done. I was done not being understood. I was emotional about it. I hated it. I got into kindergarten. It was still there. Kids can't understand what I'm saying. And my aunt's a speech therapist. And she's like, he needs to get a speech therapist. He needs to go in. So I remember being walked out of the class. One of those vague kindergarten memories. Walked out of the class to go meet with someone and work on certain words. I had to learn how to stretch my tongue differently. I had to learn how to, I'm tongue-tied as well. I had to learn how to do different things. And finally, it got to a spot where my mom said I put a lot of work into it. And I got to a spot in kindergarten where I could say those words. So that was my first speech difficulty. My second speech difficulty was that I had huge buck teeth, huge, massive. We're talking like teeth that a horse would be proud of. I mean, they're standing out, the two front teeth, right? And so I got braces at the age of 10 or 11, and I had them for 3 years, braces in Mexico, because we had moved to Mexico. That's another story for a moment. And I was so embarrassed by my teeth, especially as a teenager, and then my braces, that I would cover them with my lips. So I would speak like this because I didn't want anybody to see my teeth. I was embarrassed by it. So I learned how to mumble and I taught myself how to mumble. So that carried all the way through me until a debater in college when my mom said, you got to get better. And then my debate coach taught me how to get better. So that was the second problem I had with speaking. And then the third problem I had with speaking was when I was 10 years old, my family moved down to Mexico. Great story. My dad comes home. He's a lawyer at this point in time. Going back into a different story, he had been a drug dealer. Skip that over. Now he's a lawyer.
We're going to go talk about that too. But yeah, go on, Mexico.
And he comes home and he says, I quit my job as a lawyer. We're moving to Mexico. And my parents left the room for a while. Got in a fight, came back. My mom's crying. We moved to Mexico a couple months later. And in Mexico, I had been kind of the studious kid, focusing on a couple friends, very much not liking change. We moved to Mexico. My dad throws me into an all-Mexican school in inner city Mazatlan, Mexico, 1990. And he says, okay, Mike, if you don't want to stay, you don't have to. He goes and talks to the principal. He talks Spanish from his drug dealing days. And he comes out and says, Mike, see you later. I'll pick you up at 2:30. So I was then, from then on, dropped off into school. And for the next several years, I had to stumble through getting up in front of people and speaking. And when I spoke, I wasn't trying to be a class clown, but everybody laughed. And here's what I tell people a lot, is often we actually adjust who we are based on the reactions we think we're getting. And so I went from serious, and then because I was treated like the class clown and got in trouble for inciting people, I became a class clown. So my identity shifted to match what I thought people were wanting of me, but what people were telling me, the labels they were putting on me. And that took a while. I used to actually get psychosomatic fevers, and I would get sick on a weekly basis. My mom would say, you can't be sick again. You were just sick last week. You can't be sick again. She'd take my temperature. Sure enough, I'd be running a high temperature. And my body was reacting to the fear that I had inside of me of going into school and being made fun of and this whole identity shift and such. And finally, I overcame that, moved back to the United States. And finally, I was able to, in college, really work through a lot of these in my 20s, work through a lot of these to a spot where I got to really every single week speaking to large crowds.
All right. Let's go back to dad. You know, we got to get into that. You can't just throw that out there, right? Speaking of public speaking, someone drops a glass. You got to mention, you know, you got to say something about the glass drop. Tell us what was his story. He was a drug dealer before he was a lawyer. He became a drug dealer after he was a lawyer. Tell us about that a little bit.
So this is what I like about stories, right? That stories are these threads that all mesh together. And as a speaker, as an author, you try to separate them so that people can digest them. But really, life is non-digestible. It's something lived at the time. There's lots of things going on at the same time. Yeah. So if you go back into story, and this is actually something I do in one of my speeches where I talk about where you are is not where you have to stay. I go back into time and I talk about how my grandma was crazy. My grandparents were super crazy. My great-grandparents were super crazy. My dad grew up in really a non-viable, non-functioning family situation. So his dad said, you will never amount to anything. Had no college behind him, even though my grandfather was a MIT rocket scientist, et cetera. My dad grew up in this and said, no, I'm going to prove myself. So he went to University of Washington. And to pay for college, it was expensive back then too, to pay for college, he had to do something. And he found out that if he had some marijuana in his trunk, these are in the hippie days, and opened up his trunk, he could sell it and pay for quite a lot. So he ended up learning how to fly planes. He already knew how to pilot boats, and he learned how to speak Spanish. So he could go down to Colombia, go down to Mexico, go down to different places, and then bring it back up. So he was at a party where he was dealing some drugs. This is pre-cartel days, before it was crazy violent and all that. It was mostly hippies smuggling drugs to one another. And my dad met my mom, who was a witch. And my mom was into astral projection and spells and all kinds of different stuff. Classic, like white witch hippie stuff. Yeah. And seances and whatnot. And he was selling drugs. They met. She was running away from someone who wanted to kill her. And they hooked up that night. She saw him put a gun underneath his pillow. And she said, you got a gun? And he's like, well, yeah, I always sleep with a gun. And she said, oh, good. And that was confirmation that he was the right person for her to be together with.
Yes.
Yes.
You wow. This is good stuff right here.
And you sleep with a gun under the pillow. You can protect me. So they went on some wild adventures. And then they started thinking about having some kids. He almost got caught. And long story short, they decided that they were going to switch into legal drugs, coffee. And so started a coffee company, sold it in 1982 for a ton of money. He went back to do the bar exam because he already had finished law school, went into law practice. And around that time, all of this was happening. They both made radical, radical life decisions 6 months apart from each other, where they gave up everything that they were doing. And they actually became conservative Christians, not the type that just are political or just vote a certain way, but soup kitchens, AIDS relief in the 1980s, back when you didn't do that, and a whole bunch of other different things. And that's partly why we moved to Mexico. Well, that is why we moved to Mexico.
Okay. Did you write about this in one of your books?
No. It's more his story. My dad actually published a book. It's called Pirates, Scoundrels, and Saints. And when he released the book, I read it and I thought, oh my gosh, every single person in this book is my dad. And the women, the men, the whole thing is basically just different facets of my dad, to the point where I was calling him up saying, so did that happen? Did this happen? Did that happen? And he wouldn't tell me certainly, but everything is based off of the life that he lived. And it was quite wild to read.
All right. So we're going to get into public speaking and how people can, can speak really well in public, and which is a gift. And you need that skill set. But I'm sure people have told you, hey, Mike, you've written 10 books. You just wrote your 10th. We're going to get into that. But I mean, I know it's a different format from what you've done, but there's a book there, right?
Right. And really, at some point in time, it'll come out there. Right now, one of the ways that I use that is in more kind of an inspirational, motivational talk. And I'll go in there and say, the choices that you make, make you. But not only make you, they make your legacy. And no matter where you are, you don't have to stay where you are. Where you are is not where you have to be. So if you're in a spot where you feel like you are stuck, you can get out of that spot. And by making some choices, you can get to a different spot. Your future today depends on the choice you make right now. So it's more of a motivational, kind of inspirational for that kind of topic. But it also is relevant, that whole topic that I've learned from my parents and choices they've made and the choices I've made is relevant towards public speaking. A lot of people aren't confident. A lot of people are insecure. A lot of people are taking beta blockers and they're getting to a spot where they just hate it. A lot of people are there, but you don't have to stay there. That you can make choices to improve.
Let's talk about your choices in high school. Let's say college. I mean, your work ethic is there. Were you a good student? I mean, where did this come from? How did you make this happen? Because writing one book is a brutal process, right. So were you a smart kid? What was that like?
I was smart, and my sister was smart, and we were smart in different ways. My sister was book smart. She would work her tail off, study, and know the exact answer to an essay question. I can naturally pick up on things that are happening and quickly respond. So I would never study, and my sister was 4.0 and I was 3.99. And so mine was just directly from that ability to listen to class and then respond in the class and respond to the test. But I would answer on the test everything I knew. So there was some intelligence to it, but the work ethic, the diligence of sitting there and plodding through, that's more my sister. So I had to learn that when I wrote my first book, going through it. And when I got into the work life, I had to work on just that. For every entrepreneur, for every worker, for every business owner, there's times where you just have to grind. You have to sit there and you have to work. You have to process. You have to create systems. And that did not come naturally to me. I wanted to just show up and be there. And there's still a desire for me just to show up. And
first book, why public speaking? What, how does this journey start?
Yeah. So get back to the United States. I am wondering what to do with my life. Long story short, I was thrown off by our move back to the United States. I was actually enrolled in law school in Mexico. And so I didn't know what to do. And I was in a crossroads of life and ended up going to a small university. And in a class, the professor comes up and says, do you want to be part of the debate team? I said, well, not really. I don't really think I'm going to really do that really well. It's not something I'm really interested. It sounds pretty nerdy. I'm not really much of a nerd. And I was more of a soccer guy. I don't really want to do that. And he says, no, I really think you have what it takes. So I showed up and he taught me in one time. He taught me how to get rid of my mumbling problem. Now, he told me what to do. It was simple, but it wasn't easy. So for the next several months, I did the one exercise he told me to do. And then from there...
What was that exercise?
It's really where you talk over a pencil. You put a pen in your mouth and then you talk over it. So I put a pen in my mouth right now, talk over it. You do that.
Dude, I'm freaking out. I had a stutter when I was a kid. My mom, a very attractive lady, acted like Don Rickles. She was fast, and I would stumble over words and stutter. And my first acting class, when I was in high school, I would try to talk so fast, I'd stumble over my words. She's like, you know what? Take a cork and put it in your mouth and talk with the cork like a cigar. And I did that for like 6 months, and it totally helped.
Oh, 100%. The problem is that a lot of people, they hear that, like I've written about it now, I'm thinking two of my books, and they hear it, they try it for a week, and they give up. And that's like doing push-ups. Like if I said, hey, you want to get bigger arms, start doing push-ups every day. And if you don't do push-ups every day and you just try it for a week, it's going to be nothing. But if you do it every single day in increasing amount over 6 months, someone's going to come up to you and say, wow, your arms have changed over the last 6 months. It's an exercise. And you put that cork or that pen in your mouth. And I did it. I did it religiously every single day in the dorms. Now, I started doing really well in debate, and I went to nationals. It was a really cool thing. I ended up going into pastoral ministry. So that was a big change from what I had been doing at the time. I went to pastoral ministry, where then I'm speaking all the time, going to conferences. I became a senior pastor when I was 26, which is way too young. And I wonder why, at the time I didn't think that. I was like, yeah, I'm 26. Look at me. And then I was doing conferences and such. And then I went to, fast forward 10 plus years, I'm at a mega church speaking to thousands of people. And then I just hit a spot where I was like, I'm ready to go out into the business world.
Real quick, how'd you get to that level where you built that up? You know, hey, look, being a pastor, I have a friend that's a pastor. You know, you got to build up your following. How were you successful with that?
So when I was 22, I went into pastoral ministry, and I was just very successful as a youth pastor. The youth grew bigger than the church itself, which isn't saying much because the church was small. But by the time the pastor quit and resigned, he recommended me to the role. And the church was like, well, yeah, we're actually either the parents of the teenagers here, or we are teenagers who are now young adults and are members in the church. So they chose me as their pastor. Mm-hmm. And then that church grew. And then after 9 years at that church, I went to the next one and took a small church of 75 people out of $4 million of debt that was done by the predecessor and just some bad financial management and such, and took that out, moved them to a new location, grew that church. That church is thriving now. It's been, 6 years since I was there, and then, or seven now, I guess. And then I had all this track record. And I really believe a lot of what we do builds on the success of what we do the first time. So my first success was diligent. I worked my tail off. I mean, if I had been in the for-profit world, sometimes pastors are given a hard time because there's a few that make a ton of money, but most of them are just doing it for the impact they can make in life. So I was barely making things. I was getting paid $25,000 back in the day, right? So if I'd put that same amount of effort I'd put into that industry, quote, industry, I would have, and put it into insurance or real estate, I would have been doing much different. Right. So I worked it. And then that success bred another success. There was a lot of different churches that were looking at me for all kinds of different roles. I ended up choosing a staff role. So I was speaking to large audiences. Mm-hmm. So in that, a lot of those experiences I learned about who am I as a speaker. In my first book, Speak With No Fear, I talk about how when I first became a senior pastor, I tried to emulate other pastors that and how they spoke. I would listen to one pastor and memorize their sermon, take out the analogies or the stories about their wife or something, and say my friend's wife. So I would, for 3 months, I memorized other people's sermons and got up there. And for every week, I was a different style of person. So one time there was a guy named Rob Bell. And so I'd be up there and I'd be walking around. And if you're watching the video of this, I'd be walking around kind of like this. And I'd be like, now see what you got to do. And now, and then the next week I was Mark Driscoll and I was frowning. I'd say, now what you got to do, you got to stop it. You're just being stupid. And then I'd be Joel Osteen the next week. I'm like, friends, I want you to know. And the next week I was Rick Warren. I was like, hey, now what we're doing. And then I was T.D. Jakes, and I won't try to do that now. But I was
emulating. Real quick, one of my favorites from the 80s. Are you familiar with Robert Tillman?
I do. I didn't emulate him, but I am familiar. Yeah.
Yeah. Late night TV, like the 80s. Yeah. I mean, but it was really impacting, you know, like the, you get drawn in. You're like, I can't, there's no good movies on. I'm like, this guy, I'm going to like watch this guy for a little bit.
Oh my goodness. There are some speakers. So after about 3 months, I talk about this. I found my voice and I actually talk about what it means as a speaker. All of us, in fact, everybody just lean in right here. There's probably in your mind someone that you think you need to sound like. And it might not be exactly, it might be Michael Stein, because you listen to Michael Stein a whole bunch. Maybe it's someone else. Maybe you just have an idea. One of my clients came to me and says, Mike, you got to teach me how to be calm, cool, and collected, because that's what you need to be in the professional world. I said, who said that? That's in your mind that you have to sound like that person, just like I thought I had to sound like one of these pastors. And you got to find who you are. And in my book, Speak with Confidence, I talk about the three pillars, the three sources to confidence. Mm. The first one is identity. You have to have an idea of who you are. Otherwise, you'll always be vacillating between different ideas or always be striving to be like somebody. One of my best stories about this, and I write about this in the book, is there was a woman who came to me, and she was an officer in the military. She was getting a rank up. And she came to me and said, Mike, you got to teach me how to speak better. I was like, well, what do you want to sound like? And I was leading her towards something. She said, well, when I was a brand new officer, there was a guy who would come in and he was just authoritative and commanded attention. I was like, oh, yeah, tell me about him. She said, well, he was this big, huge guy, like 6'5", big muscular. I was like, so was he white? Was he black? He was this big white guy and he was just looked the part, and he would come in and all eyes were on him. And I said, well, tell me about yourself. Well, she was a small, petite woman of color, very different vibe. Now, people loved her, but she thought she had to be someone else. And as a result of that, she was never confident and she was nervous because she wasn't matching up to the avatar that she had in her mind. And that's what I was doing at the beginning. So that was something I learned in those years about public speaking, that often we're trying to change our identity. And we're not ourself. Now, when you speak, you should be a little bit bigger sense of yourself, a little bit bigger expressions, maybe a little bit more tonal variety, because you're in front of people and you diminish as you get out to your audience. So you need to get bigger, but you need to be yourself.
It's kind of like we're also a combination of our parents and then our own identity, and then finding, you know, a transparency, an impulsivity of moment-to-moment impulses, so you don't have time to censor yourself, right? A little bit of that too?
Yeah, there's a huge aspect of people having a vague idea of who they are. But I talk about this in the book as well. As part of my coaching that I do when I'm working with people, I do a lot of personal private work with people. And if I say, who are you? I know who I am. I'm this. And this is this vague sense. It's like if you owned a property in the middle of 500 raw acres, you probably don't know exactly your boundaries. You're like, oh, from that tree to that road to that building over there. But if someone starts developing the land around you, you better know your property lines or you will get encroached upon. And now the people around you will determine your identity for you. Before someone else determines your identity, or before you wonder what people think of your identity, you need to have a clear sense of who you are. So I quite literally, I talk about that and Speak with Confidence. And
it's an awesome analogy, by the way.
Hey, thanks. Awesome. Yeah. I actually wrote just a little book. It's kind of ties in with Speak with Confidence. It's this tiny little workbook. It's called The Identity Workbook. And it's basically just, who are you? Let's use your strengths. Let's talk about your weaknesses. Let's talk about your values. And it's like $9.99 for a small little 6x9 workbook. And it's points to Speak with Confidence, but it's a way for people to process who they are.
Have you done, because everything you're talking about is like, to me, is like hitting on all cylinders. Have you done a lot of personal development work, or how did you come up with a lot of this? Because this is a lot of universal truths that I find to be, you know, real and effective.
Yeah. Yeah. In my pastoral career, and partly because of my own insecurity and wondering who I was, there was a lot of reading. There was a lot of development. I didn't get married until I was 30. I lived on my own for a long time. I didn't date a lot in my 20s. I just worked. And because I was developing others, and because I had that whole imposter syndrome, I would work 20 hours on a sermon. And I would rewrite it and write it and write it again. And I eventually came down with a system. Actually, I talked about it in my second book on how to write a speech. But ultimately, it was like, what do I do? How do I go about this? Who am I? Who am I to speak to these people? I went to counseling to process some of the wounds that I had as a kid and some of the failures that I'd had as a speaker and other areas of life. I worked with a lot of friends. I wrote a lot, journaled a lot. There was a spot in my life, even in my 30s, where I was reading one book per week. So I was diligent in personal growth. So now sometimes I'm like, well, now what book was that? And I just read so many books on that. And then as I started writing is so different because you're processing thoughts and you're pulling things together. And there are books that I've written that are still not released that are just on my computer. And then there's speeches that I've written for different events, and I'm processing these different events. So now I try not to read at all while I'm writing. And that way I'm just letting my thoughts process and pull together everything I've experienced.
How do you do your writing process? Do you write the bones, the skeleton first? Here's my subjects. Here's what I want to write. Here's the theme. You back up. Is it a theme first? And then you say, okay, these are the subjects I want to write. Or what's your process?
So I have a process that is how I write my speeches. So this is my second book. So if anybody's like, how do you want to write a book? You could get my second book on Write to Speak. It's basically that. It's actually used in colleges. And it's how to write a basic speech. So the first thing I do is a 6-part process. The first thing I do when I'm writing is, whether it's a speech or book, is ask myself 3 questions. Why am I doing this? And it can't be because I want to, because I want to be famous. It can't be about me. It's got to be, how am I helping somebody? So even today, before coming on to the show here with Michael, I was thinking, I want to help people. So I want to help people speak confident. I want to help people. I want them to be entertained a little bit. I want them to enjoy their drive, whatever it is. So it's a really that. How are you helping people? So why? And then what? What do you want to say? Well, this book, I want to teach people how to write a speech. In this book, I want to teach people how to connect with others through emotional intelligence. In this book, I want to entertain people with a whimsical fairy tale story in Christmas time. So I wrote one for kids. So I got all these different things that are happening that I'm saying, what am I trying to accomplish? And then, okay, the who am I speaking to? Who is my audience? So in my books, I always choose, and in my speeches, I always choose 2 people. I usually chose like a male and a female and different age groups. So I might choose like that 45-year-old woman who just got promoted to a VP position, and she's wondering if she's as good as the people she's working with. And then that 27-year-old entrepreneur who knows that communication is not his forte. So those are the 2 people I'm writing to for this book. So I always have 2 people that I'm writing to for a book or for a speech. So I start with questions. And then once I get with questions, I take that what, the central idea of it, and I mind map it. I put right in the middle. So this book is about how to write a speech. And then I just go crazy with anything that my mind can think about. Sometimes I've done this up on the wall, and I'll just go through like, oh, this. Sometimes I'll do it on the computer, kind of just anything my mind thinks about. Sometimes I'll do it in one sitting. Sometimes I've done it in many sittings. And then I just put it all out there. For Speak with Confidence, the book that just came out yesterday as of this recording, yeah, that book, that mind map actually was years in the making. So that was a lot more that I was processing, because it's really my central framework on how I process confidence speaking. So mind map, yeah, go for it.
Yeah, go on.
Yeah, then I organize into points and or chapters and say, okay, this goes with that, this goes with this thematically. And then I kind of organize in chapters, kind of write it out a little bit, the raw outline. Then I write the conclusion where I want to land. This is where I want the book to end. And then I write the introduction. This is what's going to go into it. And then I edit it all for flow.
Wow. That sounds like a pretty good process. I know this is going to be difficult, what I'm going to ask. This is going to be a big ask, but let's go through the corridors of each book, you know, and like say, look, this book, like kind of like covered, you know, just a bullet pointing it, you know, so some of you might have more bullet points than others, but kind of give us like an overview of like, you know, this book was about this and that's, you know, a little something about that one and each one. Cause I think that would be really, you know, so much to gain here. So I just love to like kind of do an overview from your lips to, you know, about what each book, you know, kind of covers.
Yeah, absolutely. So when I first started, I was working with a client and she said she'd written a book. I said, well, I can write a book. She's like 25. I'm older than her. I should write a book. And so I set myself a goal, wrote it in 27 days. And just, I wanted to write it in 30 days and I wrote it. I wanted to write Speak With Confidence, my framework, but I hadn't totally processed everything. So the number one question I had was, how do I get rid of my nervousness? Now, I had already had seven strategies that I'd walk people through. So my first book is Seven Strategies for Overcoming Nervousness in Speaking. It's got over 1,000 ratings on its different editions on Amazon. And it's used in some schools. The number one complaint about it is it's too highly anecdotal and it's a lot of my story in it. And so some people don't like that. Inversely, that's also some people's favorite part about it. So that book is on lots of bestseller lists and it's been translated the second into several different languages. The second book is Write to Speak, and it's basically how to write a speech, which I just walked through. The third book was something I wrote when I was a 27-year-old pastor. It was like a devotional guide. I'd actually gotten to a spot where I never published it, never really did anything with it. And during the pandemic, I had was processing how I had gotten to a spot where I didn't want to go to church anymore. And I re-released it and put an introduction about how this was an encouragement to me to kind of get back into where I wanted to be. And the fourth one I co-wrote with Steve Kutzer, who's a well-known executive coach and keynote speaker. We wrote on Lead With No Fear, just a shift of your mind to work and lead and inspire people. The fifth book was on emotional intelligence, and it was how to connect with your audience and connect with people through emotional intelligence. And then the sixth book was Speak and Meet Virtually. So Speak and Meet Virtually was something I released as a publisher actually reached out to me and said, you should do something on this. I've actually done a TEDx on that topic as well, on how to actually be effective in your virtual communication. I think it's got 46,000 views or something. And so that was my sixth book. Now, during that time, I also did a workbook. And I did a workbook for Speak With No Fear, which is very popular. I did a workbook for Connect Through Emotional Intelligence during that time as well. And then I went and wrote a kid's book. And I wrote a kid's book for my son and the hunt at treasure hunt in the North Pole. And then the 10th book was just released yesterday, Connect Through Emotional Intelligence. Or sorry, Speak With Confidence. And then I actually have six other workbooks that are for conferences and stuff I do.
First of all, how do you promote, because you're successful with this, how do you promote your books? How do you get your books? You could write it, you write a great product. It's fitting a lot of voids for people. How do you get it out there? How do you make a book successful?
Yeah. So first of all, you go on Michael Stein's podcast and you say, hey, buy Speak With Confidence. It's life-changing. It's not just about public speaking, it's about confidence. And if you're struggling with imposter syndrome, if you're wondering with obstacles, if you're feeling like a victim, if you're struggling, get that book. If you're wondering how to grow, get that book, because it's more than just speaking. So you do things like that right there.
Right.
And then a lot of people, they're a little bit embarrassed. And I was like this when I first started, that it was kind of like, I was a pastor and I shouldn't draw attention to myself. And I know some pastors do draw attention to themselves. And those are the ones that ended up getting kind of noticed and for the better or for worse. And I was one of those people like, well, yeah, I'm a pastor. Yep. I speak to a couple people per month. I mean, you speak to 10,000. Well, you know, there's a lot more people in the United States. And so it was just this very self-effacing. I remember when I went into this entrepreneurial world, I'm like, bio for Mike Acker. Mike Acker is awesome. He's an amazing, you're writing about it and it feels so weird because basically that's what you're trying to say in your bio. And it was such a shift for me. So how do I promote books? I have to be unabashedly believe that my book helps people and promote it all the time. So I carry them around. I hand them out to people. I'll promote it, say, this is going to really be helpful to you. And you got to believe it and have a reason to believe it is. So if it's not that good and you've had some editors say it's not good, but last one got picked up by a traditional publisher, it's getting promoted to colleges. So I really believe in it. So I can unabashedly say, buy my book. It will be helpful to you. So you got to promote it and you got to believe in it and you got to do that. Second one, use any platform you have. 100 people on Facebook, 2,000. I have a couple different channels, right? And 3,000 on this one, 80,000 on this one, 30,000 on this one. So I'm promoting them on those different channels and using that. So do a lot of social media work on that. Mm-hmm. I do a lot of personal emailing. So every single day I'm sending out 100 emails every day to individual emails to different people that I've done different things with. And so I'm doing a lot of emailing. My first book, I got a lot of reviews right away because I individually asked people and I'd say, hey, Michael, I haven't talked to you for 7 years, but I recently wrote a book. Would you be interested in downloading it? Here's the link. Would you leave a review? And then if Michael doesn't get back to me 2 weeks later, I said, hey, Michael. And I actually had a tracker of everybody I was doing this with. So it's just this methodical, consistent, persistent request and promotion. A lot of people hope that whether they do it themselves or others, that the book will just go viral. Yeah. And sometimes that happens. But most of the time, viral happens when you work your butt off.
Mm. Let's talk about speak with confidence, right? That nice red and black book right there. That's the one that just came out yesterday. Tell us about the nuts and bolts of that.
Yeah. If you imagine standing on a stool, you want to stand on a stool with at least three solid legs. If you only have one leg, it's just going to slide right off. If you have two legs, you're going to be wobbling, trying to balance. But if you have three solid legs attached to that stool, then you can stand on that stool with confidence. Likewise, in public speaking, in your presentation, whether you're pitching your business, whether you are venture capital fundraising, whether you are going out on a date, whatever it is, you need three different legs to stand on. And the three different legs are skills, messaging, and identity. Now, this is the framework. This is what my public speaking program, the publicspeaking.school online. This is what the book is. This is what different workshops do. I walk people through these skills. Imagine this. If Michael said, hey, let's go play football, I would say, I can't. Why? Because I didn't grow up playing football and I can throw, but it's not going to be very great. I don't have a great football throwing arm. It's just, I don't have that skill. Now, if you said, let's go play soccer, I'd be like, let's do it. All right, I'm ready to go. I grew up in Mexico. I play soccer. I've coached soccer. I've done it for years. Let's go for it because I have the skill. So when you have skill, it increases your confidence. Think about the job that you're in. If you've developed the skill for your job, you have greater confidence in it. Now, if you just switched over to a new career, you probably don't have great confidence in what you're doing because your skill set hasn't gotten to that point. You don't know how to sell yet. So skills increase confidence. There's a ton of public speaking skills, and I lay out how to develop them at the end of the book. The second part is your messaging. When I'm speaking to you right here, I'm very confident, not just because I know who I am, which I'll get to in a moment, and I know how to present, and so I'm confident in my presentation skills, but I'm also very confident in what I'm saying. I know what I'm saying very well. I've written lots of books on it. I've processed this. I know how to put it together in my mind. And I also know how to respond to the questions that Michael suddenly puts out there towards me. So I know how to speak, whether it's prepared or impromptu. So in your messaging, you want to know how to think through what you're going to say and also speak through what you're going to say so that you know it and others know it. And the answer to all of that is systems. Systems for knowing how to answer or prepare. And then the last stool leg of confidence is identity. Who are you? When you turn on a podcast, one of the reasons why you like Michael Stein's podcast is not just because of the guests who come in. You like Michael. You like who he is, how he presents himself. You like his identity. And there's a very clear sense of who he is as he communicates. You don't just show up and read about it. You want to hear it because you want that personal connection. You might look at different people and this person is about the same level of beauty as this person, but you like this person more, or handsomeness. You like this person more because you like who they are. Speaking is identity laden. It's not something that can be separated. So you need to be confident in who you are. You need to overcome imposter syndrome, victim mentality, et cetera, so that you can get up in front of people. And that's what the book walks you through. It walks you how to establish your identity. It walks you through how to organize your messaging and then how to present with skill. Who, what, and how, or heart, head, and hands.
Nice. Yeah, you keep it simple silos, but then there's subsections from that point. But that really nice encapsulates it, too, because you want to walk around with that mindset, and then constantly thinking that, what do you want to do in the next 4, 5 to 10? You have your, I'm sure you're going to keep on writing books. I mean, why would you stop at this point? You got so many. What's the long term, step back plan?
Yeah, thanks. So right now it's such a weird spot because I feel like I've reached a goal and I got my main thought out there. And so I feel like I've actually completed a period in my work life. And a lot of us, as we do things, we might say, I want to grow my company to 100 million or I want to build this, or I want to go to 2 sites. And so we actually reached a goal and I got the TEDx. I'm actually on a TV pilot next week in Miami. And so for something that they're trying to think through whether they're going to do, it's with Grant Cardone. They're looking at the Great American Speak Off, trying to launch kind of The Voice, but for public speakers, one of those stand-up comedies for comedians, but now they want one for speakers. Yeah. So they're launching that. And I made it to the top 100 contestants. So I'm doing the semifinals next week. And so there's a spot where there's a couple things I've thought, I'm here. So I'm actually right in that spot going, okay, what do I want to do now? I've started some businesses. I've reached and hit some financial goals, done this, where I want to go now. So the two different ways I could go on this, and actually there's 3 different ones. And really we're in the middle of writing this down. And next week I'll actually be taking a full day just to process some of this thought, is whether I want to go back into a corporate setting and become like raise up. I'll still write and such, but it'll be from a different angle and do a leadership development executive role. And so I have a couple of different options for that. And then do I want to go just solo and kind of go towards the Tony Robbins, build something around my name? Or do I want to start a business and go venture capital? And I have a framework that I've been put together. So actually it's very interesting that you asked that. Because it's been that, okay, before January, do I want to re-up what I'm doing and reach a new level, the Tony Robbins type deal, or do I want to go one of these other areas?
You talk to people, many people, and you have the algorithm. You have, once you decide on what direction any one of those directions, it's going to be the same thing as, your career and you're writing your books. It's just a process and you're just going to do it. 26 days to write that first book, 28 days, 26 days.
27.
I mean, that just, that's amazing. I love your story. I'd love to see that one book about your background. That's just me. I want to put my vote in there for that. And the last question I have is, do you have your books on audio?
Yeah. So the first book, Speak With No Fear, I recorded in someone's little upstairs bedroom studio. And then the second, then I had 2 that were recorded by somebody else, but Speak With Confidence, I went to Atlanta. The publisher covered all the expenses to go to Atlanta, and I spent 4 days recording it. So it'll be an 8-hour audio book. It comes out on January 24th of 2023. The ebook and everything is out as of yesterday. The book's on Amazon. Barnes & Noble picked it up. So there'll be some of the books will be in Barnes & Noble, Books A Million, other places. So I'm really excited. And I really appreciate not only the support, if you liked the show today and you thought some of the stories were interesting, a lot of them are in there. But I really believe it will be helpful for people, even if people don't need help public speaking. That first chapter on identity will be helpful to anyone.
Right. No, I think that, it spills in over so many levels of your life. And I ask, why audio? Because driving time is learning time. So, I want to be able to get it myself. Mike, thank you so much for sharing your story today. I love it. I know I'm going to be hearing more of you in the future, regardless of which direction you're going. And so thank you so much for sharing today.
Hey, thank you, Michael. Really appreciate it. And thank you to your audience for tuning in and being part of it.
That was public speaking extraordinaire and very prolific book writer, Mike Acker. Here's a cheeky little quote on the art of public speaking. If you have an important point to make, Don't try to be subtle or clever. Use a pile driver. Hit the point once, then come back and hit it again. Then hit it a third time. A tremendous whack. Winston Churchill. Thank you for joining us, and I look forward to hanging out with you all in the next episode. All right. Have you guys been to longshotleaders.com? That's where you can check out all of the guests and the bios and the backgrounds and more. Also, if you haven't done so already, subscribe to the podcast on Apple or Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts. And if you like what we do, give us a good rating. Tell your family and friends to come by and listen. It's going to make you feel nice and toasty inside. Every week, we'll be delivering knowledge, creativity, inspiration, exasperation, perspiration. If it ends with a shun, basically, you're going to find it here. All right. Thank you for joining us. And in the great words of Bill Murray in the movie Caddyshack, friends for life, I say.